Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman program today. The hardest working man in progressive talk radio has taken the day off on a personal basis. He may want to tell you about it, but he took the day off to help a friend of his, and I commend Tom Hartman for that. I am your humble substitute host, Peter B. Collins, checking in from the left coast. I've got a radio program that I'm very proud of that airs in Monterey, California on KRXA 540 and in Eureka, California on KGOE 1480. Those are two proud affiliates of the Tom Hartman program as well. So listeners in those two cities get a double dose of Peter B. Collins today, whether they can handle it or not. You've been warned. We've got a lot to talk about today. I always like to throw out the phone number first because this is a live interactive program, and I love chatting with the Tom Hartman radio audience, both online in the TomHartman.com chat room and over the telephone. Toll-free number is 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. If you want to drop me an email, I can check it during the breaks. The address is peter at peterbcollins.com. You got that? Peter at peterbcollins.com. And there's plenty to talk about today, so I hope you'll join me for the entire 3 hours. Normally at this time on Fridays, Bernie Sanders, the distinguished independent congressman from Vermont, joins Tom for breakfast or brunch with Bernie. And Bernie took the day off with Tom as well. He's got a heated campaign there for the Senate race in Vermont, and I certainly wish Bernie Sanders all the best. Well, let's kick it off with a conversation with Chelly Pingree, who should be in the United States Senate representing the great state of Maine. That didn't work out, but she's doing a fine job as the national head, the executive director of Common Cause. Chelly Pingree, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice to join you. I'm on a cell phone actually up in Maine today, getting a little break from Washington. So I hope I don't get any static or lose you.
Well, you sound fine so far. We'll let you know if the vagaries start to creep into your signal. Chelly, thanks for joining us. Yesterday, the Republicans in the House changed their leadership a little. Instead of promoting Roy Blunt permanently into the majority leader's position, where he has been acting since Tom DeLay stepped down to tend to his legal matters, the Republican caucus, in its second ballot, elected John Boehner, a congressman from Ohio. And I'm curious about your response in the context of cleaning up the corruption in Washington. Chris Matthews, who I get more and more disappointed with every time I watch him, came on and described it as a clean break and made no mention of John Boehner's connection to the K Street Project, his long shepherding of the lobbyist portion of the Republican team in Washington, D.C. And I don't personally regard this as a clean break. What is your take on this change in the Republican leadership?
Well, you have a good assessment there. I think one thing that surprised people inside the Beltway is they thought it was a done deal for the old leadership. And I think everybody was a little bit surprised that somebody new took it. But as you say, they didn't go very far from where they had been. And this is the former notorious leader who was on the floor handing out tobacco company checks. So we know that he's got some practices under his belt, and it's likely that it's not going to be that different for business as usual. I will say that people are getting more nervous by the day as these indictments come out and people remember that they've got to go back to their home districts, and voters are getting a little bit discouraged about the climate of the activities in Washington these days.
Now, one of the things that struck me as interesting, and you two have, at Common Cause, have followed carefully the issues of honest voting in America, in the first ballot, it appears that there were more votes cast than there were Republican voters in the room. And Diebold can't be blamed for this. This was a secret paper ballot election in the privacy of the House Republican caucus. What's interesting is Chris Matthews did not mention that in his coverage of this change in the leadership. I had to learn about it from the most reliable source in broadcast news, Jon Stewart's Daily Show.
You know, I actually didn't hear that about the vote count, but I will tell you that anybody who's ever served in an elected office knows that leadership elections are the most difficult to predict. People go into the election thinking that they've got the votes. You know, it's just a vote on a promise. It's a secret ballot. You never know how anybody voted. And the numbers aren't usually how they turned out. And as you heard in this one, they had to go to a second ballot. And what a lot of people do when they're running for leadership is they say, you know, I know you've promised your vote on the first ballot, but can I have your vote on the second ballot? And this was a three-way split. So he benefited from the opportunities of getting the second ballot vote. And again, I think it was somewhat of a surprising upset. But as you said, a lot of this looks like business as usual, and people are saying, how are they going to make sure they really clean up this mess that Congress is in right now? And that's going to come down to, are they willing to put real reform proposals on the floor? Are they willing to pass them? And then are they going to enforce these laws and rules that they make for themselves?
I certainly don't object to banning former legislators turned lobbyists from the House gym and, more importantly, from the House floor, but that doesn't really fix the fundamental problem. And K Street is really the symptom of the ingrained relationship between the Republican leadership, the lobbyists who provide campaign cash, which is funneled in from corporate America, and then the Republicans turned around and invited those same lobbyists to come in and help them write the legislation because it's so difficult to do it all by yourself. And that kind of festering network is what we really need to get to the bottom of. And Shelley Pingree at Common Cause, you have a bold proposal for an independent ethics commission. This is not the House and Senate internal ethics committees that have been neutered in recent years, but you are calling for an outside commission to really police the activities of our elected officials. I think it's a bold proposal. The question is, how do you get these members to vote to put themselves under a watchdog?
Well, you know, it's all going to depend on how much pain they're feeling, and that will be dependent on what people are saying back in their home districts. You know, I think a lot of people wanted to think, you know, they could just shut their eyes and this would all go away. And the truth is, you look at the polling data, 90% of the public wants a gift ban, 50% wants to stop lobbyists from giving contributions, 73% thinks that both parties are equally bad, a pox on both of their houses. And I think what members are finding is they go home back to visit their districts and read their emails, listen to their calls, people are saying, you know, enough of this business as usual in Washington. Now, they will still think, oh, well, we can pass a couple little changes, just as you said, you know, take the former member lobbyists off the floor. But the truth is, if they go back to where they used to do it, which was basically no enforcement of these rules that stand and no enforcement of any new rules that they're going to create, it won't take long for the public to realize that you can't survive with the fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah. So do you have members willing to carry your proposal forward in legislative form?
We do. And, you know, I think there's increasing support for it. The Senate Democrats put together a watered-down version of this, but we've been talking to members as recently as of yesterday who are working on legislative language to put this out. There's no bill that's hit the floor. But again, I think they started out thinking that this would be easy, and day by day they're realizing that it's going to take quite a bit both to get under the scrutiny of the press, which is occasionally unusual, as you know, to get the traditional press to examine these things, and also the public who says, you know, if you want to run for re-election in my district, you better get clear of these scandals.
Mm-hmm. Shelley Pingree from Common Cause. I just want to turn to one other issue, and I will disclose at this point that last May in St. Louis, Missouri, I accepted a blandishment from Common Cause. You invited me to a reception, and you provided a free meal, and I wanted to disclose that right here and right now. And what you announced at that little reception was a new effort to reform the corporate media in this country. You announced your embrace of a media bill of rights and a very interesting approach to buying stock in corporate media companies so that you can go to their annual meetings and try to shame them into adopting the media bill of rights. I wanted to know where that project stands.
Well, we're definitely moving forward on this on a variety of fronts, and not only have we continued to work on these issues of media ownership, and Congress is currently looking at the reauthorization of the Telecom Act of 96, which will allow for all kinds of shenanigans on the floor and investment by lobbyists to make sure they get their way. But we've been looking at a lot of the issues around the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, making sure that the Internet access remains free and available to all citizens, and using every possible technique we can, whether it's lobbyists, citizens activism, or looking at the proxy vote in corporations when we can. So it's an extremely important issue, as I don't have to tell you, and I certainly hope that you you enjoyed whatever meal we were serving that night, and appreciate your willingness to stand up and talk about it, because a lot of people who work in the media sometimes are unwilling to look at some of the issues and concerns that we face in a free democracy and needing this important information.
Absolutely. Chelly Pingree, you keep up the good work. Enjoy your break this weekend.
Keep up the work yourself.
All right, thank you. That's Chelly Pingree, National Director of Common Cause. Visit their website, commoncause.org. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Your calls are next.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Say what you want, mean what you say. Remember the deepest seeds still find the light of day.
Coast to coast, it's the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today and taking your phone calls right now at 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466, and let's go to Mark in Seattle. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Here. First, I want to say that you and Tom and Rennie Rose and the rest of everybody on Air America are an oasis of sanity and a lunatic bin of Republicanism on the radio.
Well, we do it for our own mental health. This is my therapy, Mark.
Right. Well, this we're living in a world in a lunatic ward with psycho Republicans controlling the media, but you're an oasis in that lunacy.
We're trying to fly over the cuckoo's nest, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think we're walking into the pigeon's nest right now. I was thinking about, how do you pronounce his name?
You don't say Boehner, it's Boehner.
Boehner, okay. Well, it looks like Boehner to me.
Well, they passed up on a Blunt and selected a Boehner.
Yeah, it sounds like a Seinfeld episode. What I was going to say is I really think the Democrats need to just work and work and just hammer away at this, at keeping the connection between, the link between Boehner and Tom DeLay. And I was, I came up with a little slogan that says, Tom DeLay light, all the cronyism, only half the hammer.
Well, that's not a bad phrase. Can we get a bumper sticker and a T-shirt out on that by Monday?
I hope so. I hope
yeah.
so. Because I think that, because with DeLay coming up with his trial and Abramoff and all the rest of these things going up, and it'll be dragged out through the year, through the summer, up to toward the election, that we just need to continue to make that connection between these, miscreants who've been caught so far and the rest of the Republican Party, because the whole party has been bought and paid for by corporate America.
Well, and I have to say that I favor the Democrats over the Republicans on this issue. However, they're stuck in the same mess there in Washington, and here's an example. Yesterday, Senator Feinstein of California proposed, along with Trent Lott, a reform to the earmark process. If you don't know what that is, earmark is become a growing problem. It has really exploded in the last 5 to 7 years. And this is where an individual member of the House or Senate basically lays a claim on a certain amount of money for a special project in their district. And some of it's very good stuff that doesn't get funded in standard legislation or through the normal process of funding the cabinet agencies in Washington. But this system is so far out of control that modifying it and simply saying, well, if the senators acknowledge that they're the ones who asked for this earmark, and if there is a process where it's brought to the Senate floor and it can be blocked by a senator requiring a 60-vote override, that puts some safeguards on it. Well, that's true. This is a step in the right direction. But it doesn't clean up the mess, and it doesn't limit the amount of our taxpayer money that can be blown on special projects like, famously, the Bridge to Nowhere.
Yeah, I was going to say about Stevens Bridge to Nowhere. Yeah, there's no question that that the pork runs deep and wide everywhere through Congress, and I'm all for getting it cleaned up. But it puts me in mind of a remark that FDR made back in the 1930s when there was a questionable Democrat running for re-election looking for his support. And, you know, one of his aides said, you're not going to go help that son of a bitch, are you? He said, well, look, he may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
I've heard that line before, yeah.
I would rather throw my support and weight behind Democrats who I believe have at least the foundation to do what's right for every American than behind Republicans who are bought and paid for and sold out to corporate America and to the 0.1% of billionaires who are controlling this or attempting to control this country.
All right, Mark, thanks for your call. Let's go to Paula in Eureka, California, listening to KGOE. Hello, Paula.
Good morning, Peter B. Thanks for filling in for Tom.
It's my pleasure.
And I got up this morning, and the first thing I read on CNN was reading about the Muslim backlash against the cartoon publication, and that CNN had decided that they didn't really need to publish that out of respect for Islam, and you know how much I appreciate their fact of censorship. So I got very upset, and so what I did and what I was calling to ask your, you know, anyone out there who can hear who's concerned about freedom of the press, what I did was I did a Google search, and I put in the Danish and the French ambassadors in Washington, and I emailed them to thank them and support their country's stance with regard to censorship and freedom of the press, because they identified quite rightly that this is in essence a clash of civilizations, and there's too much at stake here to back down, and how much we appreciate their efforts. And I know that the involved businesses, you know, uninvolved businesses have been, you know, affected, you know, adversely, but they're the ones that are doing the right thing, that those countries, and they're holding the lines for us because we don't have that here anymore.
Well, I stand firmly for freedom of the press and personal expression, and I do realize that there are sensitivities about religious issues. They're not limited to the Islamic world, but that is a very sensitive touch point these days. I'm sorry to see that CNN is publicly censoring itself. Discretion is one thing, but announcing that you're censoring your product is very, very different. Thank you, Paula. I appreciate you pointing that out. More of your calls coming up. The next half hour is wide open for callers, so join me here on the Tom Hartman Program. Call us toll-free at 866-440-TOM. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Mr. Hartman today.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Panama, Appaloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Topeka, Anchorage, Anchorage, everywhere.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, where he leaves the music behind on his iPod and hits shuffle. I'm not sure what that one is, but it's kind of cool. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman today, and we're taking your calls. Rick from Seattle, thanks for holding on. You're next here. Go right ahead.
Hey, I'm just, excuse me, losing my voice here. Also got a cramp in my jaw from gritting my teeth. I was just calling to see if I'm the only one who's totally outraged by the fact that they figured out a way to postpone the Scooter Libby trial till after the midterm elections.
How they've done that, I'm not aware of it. This is news.
Yeah, I actually heard it on the Air America news break this morning.
Okay.
And, I've got a cramp in my jaw since hearing it.
Well, the technique that I'm aware of is that they announced last week that they want to subpoena a lot more journalists, and that, of course, will slow the process down. And this, in my view, is simply a delay and a dilatory tactic, because we know that, or let me put it this way, based on what we know, it appears that Scooter Libby leaked to the media and then covered his tracks by saying, oh, yeah, I heard about that plane thing from reporters. And so I can't say who said what to whom and when, but that's my take on what we know from the public record to date. And I'm not at all surprised. I mean, the whole purpose, the whole practice of the Bush administration has just been to push everything out as far as possible and delay the day of reckoning. And the word delay, of course, has a double meaning, and that was unintended.
Yeah, and I also wonder how much of that is just simply drawing off their expectations that the American public has no memory. you know, there's some piece that I suspect is involved in that as well.
Well, it's not only the short attention span, but it's the distractibility of the American public and the success that Bush and Rove have had in distracting us on a regular basis.
And I guess when it works, you stay with it.
It's winning for them, absolutely. Thank you, Rick. Let's see, who's been holding the longest here? Steve in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. This is Peter.
Hey, how you doing? You know what's always driven me nuts for Republicans and Democrats is people break the law and they want to come up with new laws. I don't understand it.
That's a very simple point, isn't it, Steve?
But I've never seen the big deal, but there's equal money on both sides of just about every issue. I could probably find an exception on the I'm a Republican. I could probably find an exception where there's more money on the left than the right. And you could probably find more exceptions where there's more money on the left, right than the left on a certain issue. But when it all pans
Steve,
out, there's pretty much equal money on every issue.
Steve, you're entitled to that opinion, but on the facts, you're not correct. Particularly since Bush took office, the amount of money funneled into Washington and the amount of that money channeled to Republicans over Democrats is substantial.
Okay.
And the K Street Project in particular took the system at to new steroid-induced heights, where we had these, you know, lobbyists who were scooping up incredible amounts of cash, not just from Native Americans, but from the, you know, very big corporations that have business before the Bush administration. And the benefits of those investments are very clear. So I'm sorry to say that you're not correct, that, sure, there is lobbying money on the left. I'm not disputing that whatsoever. But it is dwarfed by both the amount of money on the right and the effectiveness of that money.
Well, the effectiveness of the money is because Republicans have the House and Senate, right? I mean, I'm in the NRA, and if I ever got to elected office, I'm much more susceptible to talking to the NRA than to, say, the National Organization of Women. I mean, it's just the way it is.
For you?
Well,
and how lovely
and
for
sure,
you.
I'm sure the opposite with you. If you were in office, you would be more susceptible to talking to the National Organization of Women than the NRA.
Well, the hypothetical doesn't work, Steve. I'll never get into office. I couldn't do it. I would never be able to raise the money, and I don't have the patience to sit through all those committee meetings. But thanks for your call. Let's go down the road to Pittsburgh to Janice. Hello, Janice. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
Yes, how are you, Peter?
I'm okay, thank you.
I was wondering, there's a blog, I have to say, it's called twopoliticaljunkies.com.
And haven't seen it.
On that, I mean, .blogspot.com, but whatever. On there, I was reading that there is a thing where our American soldiers are kidnapping the insurgents' wives.
Mm-hmm.
One of these wives was a nursing mother. Have you read this story or know anything about it?
I am aware. I haven't read the blog that you're referring to, but I am aware of the story. It surfaced about 10 days ago, and there have been at least a handful of incidents in Iraq where Americans have, in some cases, kidnapped or otherwise detained the wives of subjects they either wanted to talk to or arrest. And so it is a questionable tactic, particularly in view of the kidnapping and apparent torture of Jill Carroll.
Yes.
And so it is a hot-button issue. And let me add one more to it, Janice, that has not gotten any major attention in America's media, and I don't understand why. Marjorie Cohn is a professor of law in San Diego at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law, and she is a very credible source.
Uh-huh.
She interviewed Janice Karpinski, the National Guard general,
right,
who was in charge nominally of Abu Ghraib and other prisons in Iraq. And recently, General Karpinski related to Marjorie Cohn that there are numerous incidents of American service women who have been raped on nighttime visits to the bathroom, to the military latrine.
Oh.
And this has been covered up, or at least unreported, in the American media so far. And it's clearly outrageous, and it's something that we need to contend with inside our own military circles. And to date, for whatever reason, it's been hushed up.
So we should maybe get on the CNN whenever they tell you to log in or whatever. And
well, go to truthout.org and search for Marjorie Cohn.
Okay.
And she had a piece that was published, I believe, a week ago Monday that details this. Check that out and pass it along, will you, please?
Oh, thank you. I will.
All right. Keith in Pittsburgh. We got a double header from the Three River City. Hello. Keith, are you there? Well, Keith, one more time. Pittsburgh. All right, now to Edmonds, Washington for Rebecca. Good morning, or, well, it's morning in Edmonds.
Good morning. It's 9:41.
Yes, hi.
Good morning. Hi. Okay, last night I was reading on rawstory.com, and there's an article. The title is Court. Just let me scoot up. Court filings shed more light on CIA leak investigation. And in these new filings, they talk about striking revelations. One of the things is that Libby says that he was given the okay by his superiors to out Valerie Plame. And now, who was his superior? Wasn't he next, just below Cheney?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the other thing you need to link it to is it's the acronym WIG, W-H-I-G, White House Iraq Group.
Right. Yep.
And that's
Mary
Rove.
Mm-hmm.
That's Libby.
Mm-hmm.
Cheney.
Mary Madeline.
Madeline. Jim Wilkinson, who used to be the flack for Richard Army, the powerful Republican from Texas.
Well, in the same paragraph with that information, that which says they also hint that Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff, I. Lewis Libby, may have outed claim on the orders of his superiors. Okay, but just ahead of that it says, and this disturbs me just more than anything else, there still has not been a formal damage assessment on what happened as a result of the outing. And I wrote to Pat Roberts last night, chair of the Senate Select Intelligence Committee.
Right.
Just to say, when are you going to do this? We've been waiting for now almost 3 years, and we're still waiting, and we're not forgetting about it.
Well, I'm glad you did that.
And we just need to keep this out there, because this story is right at the hub of everything.
Well, the other development that I saw at Raw Story in the last couple of days is they have a copy that's posted there of a letter from Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor,
mm-hmm.
and it suggests that some White House emails were deleted
mm-hmm.
In violation
right.
of policy
right.
and, of course, the stated order from the president for all
right.
of his administration employees to cooperate with this investigation. Wink, wink, nod, nod, fingers crossed.
Uh-huh, and that's in the same article. And they also talk about that other reporter, the third Time magazine reporter, being John Dickerson, the son of the late Nancy Dickerson,
mm-hmm.
the reporter.
Yeah.
Finally, one other on a different subject. You mentioned the vote on House Representative Boehner.
Yeah.
They did figure out that the one vote that was off had to do with the Puerto Rican, he can vote on internal government decisions, but he can't vote on other things. And he did, his vote was counted, and that was where it was off.
Oh,
gosh. It wasn't some shady deal there, so.
I'm really disappointed.
Well, I'm just, you know, got to keep the facts out there. So.
I understand.
Thank you very much.
All right, Rebecca, thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
And coming up next, one of the things I want to talk with you about is, you know, the president announced that we're addicted to oil and an initiative to reduce our dependence on Middle East oil, he inferred in the State of the Union message the other night. They quickly backpedaled from that. And one other thing he forgot to include in the State of the Union message is that we need more cash for Iraq. Just another $70 billion to get us through the rest of this year. And, of course, it would have ruined the State of the Union message to link the cost of the war with his language about the route to victory. We'll talk about that next on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We were born before the wind, also younger than the sun.
That's one I know. It's Van Morrison.
Yeah, the Bonnie Boat was one.
as we sail into the mystery.
I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom here on the Tom Hartman program today. I'm taking your calls at 866-440-TOM. It's toll free if you haven't figured that out. 866-440-8466 puts you through. And Chris is a proof that it works. He's calling from Memphis, Tennessee. I hope it's a male Chris since I said he. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, boy,
yes,
I guess
I'm a
right.
Male.
Yep, nice to talk to you. How are you?
Pretty good, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
But I just had a question because, I mean, I'm 23, married here in Memphis, and what got me into politics was music and talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
And Pearl Jam is one of them. Eddie Vedder, you know, is the man. And Howard Stern. I guess he's like your next-door neighbor now on Sirius.
Okay.
Anyway, I heard Howard 100 News today. And I guess it's like one of his channels that said that the cost of the war is $400-something billion right now up to date.
That's a pretty good ballpark figure of what has been asked for as of yesterday. And I mentioned just before the break that the president didn't want to, you know, dirty up the State of the Union message by groveling for more money for the war. He took the high road and, of course, talked about the plan for victory without any details. And, you know, he tried to once again silence the opponents of the war by saying, you know, that it's not a strategy to, I don't remember his exact words now. At any rate, the supplemental request now is for $70 billion. We're spending roughly $5 billion a month in Iraq and additional money in Afghanistan. And I don't know whether people in the Gulf Coast hurricane zone consider it an insult or not. It seems like it to me. But they bundled the war request with an extra $18 billion for the hurricane relief and rebuilding. And, of course, that doesn't come close to what the needs are there. And I think that's one reason why the president barely mentioned the hurricane victims and their continuing plight in the State of the Union message. He waited till the very end and, I believe, devoted about 150 words to it. But there was no real commitment to it. And as I look at this, without being an isolationist or any of those straw dogs the president tried to attack in his speech the other night, it really is painful to see how much money we continue to pour down the Bush rat hole in Iraq, and we have paltry sums to help the people who've been devastated along the Gulf Coast. And I just think that this is the kind of contrast that Americans need to see to understand what this president is all about.
I mean that's true, and it scares me how at my age, I mean I would serve my country, but they said the war is, you know, not, you know, still diminishing, whatever they're saying. But
well, they're saying a lot of happy talk there, Chris. They don't really give you much factual information. And I would refer you to Jack Murtha, who is no peacenik. He's nobody who's soft on the Pentagon. And he has spoken very clearly about the mess we are in Iraq and the need to extricate ourselves from it. Not to cut and run. That is the favorite buzz phrase of the neocons. But to assess our situation and recognize that we have stretched our own troops beyond the breaking point, we are unable to respond to a provocation right now in another part of the world in the same manner that we have enmeshed ourselves in Iraq. And there are other significant costs in terms of our public image, our reputation, our standing in the world community, and our ability to negotiate with rogue governments like Tehran over nuclear development issues.
I mean, in my opinion, I believe, excuse my language, I mean, we're on radio. I mean, it sounds like radio, but it pisses me off.
Well, we're not entirely on satellite radio, so try to keep your language clean. I'm not Howard Stern.
I'm sorry. It makes me mad that it's just that I can't even explain. I'm so mad right now.
I can hear that, and I respect your position, Chris. I just want to encourage you to go beyond Howard Stern's news channel There are a lot of other great sources out there. I'm glad you're listening to the Tom Hartman program today. And stay in tune, because there's a lot of information available to Americans that doesn't show up in the corporate media, and you need to be aware of it. I'm glad you're listening. Let's go to Keith in Pittsburgh. Thanks for calling, Keith. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. I have two things I wanted to say, really. The first one was to go with the, you know, I was following up on the last caller. You know, I mean, all of this, all of what we hear is propaganda. So when you listen to Bush and his aides, mm-hmm. it's all going to be propaganda and spin. Because if you heard what Joseph Biden said the other day concerning Bob Woodward, he said that he warned him. He said, don't listen to the malarkey. The place has gotten worse and we're losing the war. So that's the one thing I wanted to say to follow up. But the main reason I called was this thing about these pictures concerning Islam and defaming the prophet and all of that. You know, people have to stop and think about this. You know, there's a spirit to law, and just like it would be out of line for somebody to walk into a synagogue with a Nazi T-shirt on with Hitler on it. You know, it's out of line for that cartoonist to pull that type of stuff.
Keith, I've got to go to a break here. I thank you for the call. There's a balance of taste and freedom of expression, and I agree with you. I think you have to operate in good taste and respect people's religious values. At the same time, I think people are free to express themselves, even on religious issues. I'm Peter B. Collins. Hope you enjoyed this hour of the Tom Hartman program. Stay tuned for more where it's available.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
A build-up. He's not here today, and you've got to accept a substitute. Howdy, I'm Peter B. Collins, checking in from the Left Coast. I'm the host of a daily radio program on KRXA 540 in Monterey and KGOE 1480 in Eureka. They named it after me, the Peter B. Collins Show. And I'm delighted to be sitting in for Tom today. His program airs on both of those radio stations, and so we welcome listeners from those two stations and all across the country to the Tom Hartman program. The toll-free number to call to join the program is 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. You can also jump into the TomHartman.com chat room. And I see Narlodius is in there. I want to give a shout-out to one of my longtime listeners from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Joining me now is a distinguished progressive journalist and radio producer, Stephanie Hendricks. She's done a lot of work for Pacifica Radio and some of their very special broadcasts when they cover events in the nation's capital and elsewhere. She's written a powerful but small-sized book called Divine Destruction, Wise Use, Dominion Theology, and the Making of American Environmental Policy. Stephanie, welcome to the program today.
Thanks so much for having me, Peter.
I wanted Tom Hartman's listeners to learn about your book and to learn about the so-called wise use movement. And you can define it better, but in an elevator pitch, my sense is that this is the intersection of fossil fuel mining and other resource extraction industries, some evangelicals, and some people who love to go out and despoil the national parks with their off-road vehicles, ATVs, and all of those other polluting devices that they enjoy on the weekends. And
that's
this
right.
has culminated in a movement that is having a significant impact on environmental policy and a rollback of many of the regulations that we have fought for over the last 30 years.
That's right, Peter. You said that very well. The Wise Use Movement, one thing, they are a diverse group of folks that are all assembled together, but the one thing they do have in common is a dedication to repealing protections for the environment and specifically for public lands. And so they've kind of got a parallel movement going along with the religious right and a very strange and frightening group in the religious right who are dominion theologists who interpret the Bible that we must subdue the earth, and some of these people say even burn the earth so that Christ can return. So with these two movements and their intersections, they definitely share common people and common organizations. There's been a real rollback on protections for our environment when the pressures on our environment in terms of the amount of toxins and increased population and things like that are growing. So it's a disturbing situation. There is hope but in this story. But what I'm about to say,
I mean no disrespect to people who are truly religious, but it's hard for me to see that there's a spiritual side to pillaging and raping the earth.
Well, the religious ideology is that God is not in nature. This is something that a Dominion theologist told me, that in the scripture it's very clear that God is not in nature. And if you think God is in nature, then you are a pantheist, you're an idol worshiper, and you're heretical, and you're against God. So that's the crux of that religious argument. Now, while researching the book, I was delighted to find right-wing, fundamentalist, evangelical Christians who interpret that those sections of the Bible completely differently, that because God did make nature, we have a moral, spiritual obligation to protect it. And they are now, as we speak, arguing scripture with the people, New Christian Right, members of Congress, and George Bush to actually bring global warming and wilderness protection into the forefront of their policies. And it's a big battle that's being underreported right now. In fact, I don't think anyone's really reporting too much about it.
So, Stephanie Hendricks, tell us who Ron Arnold is and about the Center for Defense of Free Enterprise.
Well, Ron Arnold calls himself the founder of the Wise Use Movement. He founded the Center for the Defense of Free Enterprise in 1974. It was sort of a think tank, so to speak, funded by chemical industries, timber industries, resource extraction industries to, in my opinion, put out disinformation to the American public so they could push forth their profit-driven strategies without having environmental protections in the way. And so Ron was teamed with a gentleman named Gottlieb who had a big direct mail business, and they launched this grassroots movement of disinforming American public about environmental issues as they relate to corporate pollution and destruction. The Center for Defense of Free Enterprise is located in Bellevue, Washington, a beautiful place, and up until last year, Dick Cheney was on its board of directors. So there's a very direct connection between our administration and Ron and his colleagues that are continuing to have disinformation campaigns. One of them today that's happening, they're trying to bring DDT back in Congress, and Paul Dreesen, who works for the Center for Defense of Free Enterprise, Ron's partner, his twist on this is that environmentalists hate black people because environmentalists don't want DDT to come back, and they claim DDT is the only thing that can kill the mosquitoes that cause malaria in Africa. This is a big disinformation campaign that's getting ready to launch. It hasn't gone full tilt, but you're going to be seeing more about this. And
it sounds as insidious as the pushback you get from Monsanto. If you're critical of genetically modified seeds and food products, then you must be against feeding the hungry populations of the world.
Well, let us on this issue of Monsanto, let us know that they have patented a certain type of rice that's been grown for thousands of years in India, and now pressuring the Indian authorities to arrest the peasants who have been growing this rice for food. So they've taken intellectual property right ownership of a food source that's been grown for thousands of years, and they're starving these people by not letting them grow food, and yet they're attacking people who are concerned about genetically modified crops by using it is very insidious, and I think this has been a mark of this administration for a long time. When you have the Healthy Forest Initiative, when you look at it, it really means cutting down the forest. When you have the Clean Skies Initiative, which in fact gutted the Clean Air Act, that was written, by the way, for your listeners who know the Federalist Society. The Federalist Society gave us Mr. Alito, our new Supreme Court Justice, and John Roberts. Karl Rove was bragging a few weeks ago about the Federalist Society. It is an organization committed to putting fundamentalist, and in my opinion, dominion theologist Christians on every judicial bench in the country, and they turn out anti-environmental legislation like the stuff that gutted the Clean Air Act. So if they're masters at twisting information to be the opposite of what they're actually doing. And so it's a very slippery crowd here, and Ron Arnold, I have to say, is the master of it. I want you to know, Peter, since the last time we spoke, I actually debated Ron Arnold on a New York City radio station last week, and it was an interesting conversation. I asked him if he believed in God, and he said no, and I'm sure that would not go over well with a lot of his constituents that he works with. And when I asked him if he lived in a beautiful place, he described how the mountains were beautiful and how the forests were by his house, and he fed the little squirrels. And then I asked him, Ron, aren't you stirred? Isn't your soul stirred by that nature? Don't you want to protect it? And he totally erupted and said, you're being vicious. You're being vicious. And then it was over. You know how radio goes.
You're the kind of person who could make Mrs. Alito cry. Stephanie Hendricks.
I don't want to make her cry.
Stephanie Hendricks is the author of Divine Destruction. It's a powerful new book, and it's out in soft cover, and you should find it at your independent bookstore. It's from Melville House. And just one more point. Stephanie Hendricks names names in this book and really helps you connect this kind of underreported movement, the Wise Use Movement, with the players in Washington today. And let me single out one special guy for focus right now, Richard Pombo, who chairs the House Resources Committee. What is his connection to Wise Use, Stephanie?
Well, Richard comes from a long line of ranchers here in California, in the Central Valley, in Tracy, and he comes from these ranchers, though, sold out to developers and agribusiness and the big food and chemical corporations that are part of that whole culture. And so he comes out of the property rights culture of the Wise Use Movement, which many ranchers have been seduced into, only to be not treated very well by the multinational corporations that come in and take over their land or control their prices for beef or crops that they grow or force them to use poison when they grow their food or whatever it is that the corporations are doing. The ranchers who buy into this unfortunately suffer from the associations. But Richard Pombo comes out of that culture, and he gets a lot of funding from the Wise Use corporations that put him into office. And so he pushed forth their policies to...
Stephanie, I'm sorry we're up against a break here, but I want to recommend your book to our listeners, Divine Destruction, Wise Use, Dominion Theology, and the Making of American Environmental Policy. We've been talking with Stephanie Hendricks on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program, coast to coast, and I'm glad you're listening. I'm sitting in for Tom today, Peter B. Collins in California, and I welcome your calls. We've got a few lines open right now, so it won't be a long wait if you care to join us in conversation. 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. And most of you know Tom spells his name T-H-O-M. I'm also keeping an eye on the chat room at tomhartman.com. I have about 16 screens up on my little monitor here, and of course my screensaver is the smiling booking photo of Tom DeLay, the pestilence from Sugarland, Texas. And I may change that at some point, but it's interesting when it bleeds through, just a little picture of Tom DeLay or a corner of his hair between all these screens that are up on my monitor right now. Hope you can picture that. John in Valdosta, Georgia, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
perfect lead-in for me, Peter. You're doing a great job holding down the chair. Keep getting the truth out there.
Pleasure.
And my point was going to be, speaking of Tom DeLay, that the Democrats' biggest problem, in my opinion, is a lack of a coherent strategy. I mean, we've been – Bush and his cronies throw so much crap out there. If you try to attack them on everything, you sound like nothing but a bunch of wacky conspiracy theorists. So you pick one – take a page out of their playbook, the same page strategy. If every single Democrat, you know, elected representative, congressman, senator, every time they get in any kind of media, print or electronic, pounds one subject, and to me, that one subject should be the lack of investigations going on over everything that we've already talked about. We've tried the Iraq thing, and they've lied so much about that, it's too hard to untangle. So if you just pound and pound and pound every time, especially with the elections coming up, you know, the poll numbers have shown that people are starting to turn around, and they're like, hey, what's really going on? So you just pound and pound and pound. If you want the truth, we'll get to it. Put us in the majority, and you will find out what's been going on.
Well, John, I think you're right on target, and I do think that the Democrats are moving in that direction. I don't dispute your criticism. At the same time, there is a unified use of the soundbite phrase, culture of corruption. And it started from Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader. And I have heard a number of very different members of the House and Senate use that phrase or a variation of it. And I think it is effective. I think that people are seeing the linkage between Abramoff and the lobbying scandals and the excesses of Tom DeLay. And, you know, some of it starts to surface in ways that you and I, you know, might not have suspected. For example, I think that people are finally catching on to the boondoggle of the Medicare prescription drug package. And many of them are now learning for the first time how it came into being. Based on lies, the projections that showed the true cost were suppressed, and a man was threatened with the loss of his job if he blew the whistle on it. And then there was the extended vote in the House when they twisted arms, when they offered bribes to a Michigan congressman for contributions to his son's campaign to succeed him if he would change his vote on that issue. And this goes forward even to just the other day when they passed the shameful package of cuts in order to pave the way for more tax cuts for the rich. The cuts they passed, of course, student loans, Medicare, Medicaid, deadbeat dad collection efforts. Those are the things that the Republicans are so proud of. And keep in mind that that vote just barely squeaked through the House. And in fact, my Congressman Sam Farr told me that the vote was extended. And right at the time the vote was extended, the time to vote was extended, the Democrats had defeated that bill by one vote. And they extended the vote, they twisted or broke a couple of arms, and they barely squeaked it out with two votes. So I think that people are starting to see the connection between all these issues and their impact directly on us. It's not just both parties doing the same, and it's not business as usual. This is a level of corruption that I haven't seen in Washington in my lifetime.
You're right. I hope, though, that the Democrats aren't too married to that phrase, culture of corruption. I just don't think that one single soundbite phrase is a winner for us. It sounds way too much like something nasty and twisty like the Republicans would say. If it was something much more simple like, let's get the truth. You know, let's get the truth. That's, to me, that says it all. If
well,
they were
and John,
say that all the time, we'd win.
John, the phrase that they used with the response to the State of the Union from Governor Tim Kaine of Virginia was so pathetic the other night. I mean, it was a retread from a Robert Redford movie, The Candidate.
Right.
I'm okay. There's got to be a better way. And Tim Kaine, for, you know, whatever he's worth, couldn't deliver that speech in a very effective manner. So, yes, the Democrats still need help with their message. I agree with you. Let's go to Alice, one of my staunch supporters in Humboldt, California. Hello, Alice.
Hello, Peter. Good to hear you.
Thank you, ma'am.
I will be listening to your program today.
Well, I'm giving a doubleheader in a couple of cities, so I hope you can stand it.
Oh, by all means, we can.
Tell us what's on your mind today, Alice.
This Bush administration is so terrible that I don't put anything past them. They stole both elections. I'm sure of that. They got us into wars for their own personal gain. They are robbing our treasury.
Yes.
And claiming they were superior, have superior morals. After we need, Peter, we need to find some way to get rid of them all.
And so I'm out of time here, but thank you for your call. Good to hear from you today. I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's the Tom Hartman program. Tom has the day off. He'll return on Monday. I'm Peter B. Collins on the left coast, sitting in for Tom today. Delighted to be with you. Taking your calls at 866-440-THOM, 866-440-8466. And I'm a man of morning habits. I want to thank the citrus growers of Texas for my OJ this morning. I squeezed four Texas Sweet and went down really nice. I also have a morning habit of newspapers. I consume as many as I can, and one of them is the San Francisco Chronicle. Quickly, there is a guy who does some really nasty cartooning, and if you've never seen his work, the website for the Chronicle is sfgate.com. His name is Don Asmussen, and he calls himself the Bad Reporter. And just one panel from his efforts today. Skilling admits Enron's books were only inspired by real events. We never claimed this was an accounting memoir. In fear of Oprah, corporations everywhere are putting new warning stickers on their books. Facts altered for dramatic purposes. And just above that in the Chronicle, a longtime friend of mine, John Carroll, writes a daily column. And I want to read a couple of excerpts from it and get your thoughts about activist Cindy Sheehan, who I have talked with on many occasions and I have a high regard for. And I'll tell you my opinions about what I'm about to read after I read it. So this is from John Carroll. I do admire Cindy Sheehan. I like the way she used her moral authority to focus the attention on a single story of needless sacrifice, a single victim of the Bush administration's profligate and inept invasion of Iraq. Her standing as the mother of a soldier killed in the line of duty made her, for a while, not susceptible to the usual attacks from the right. When the sleek presidential motorcade whizzed past her small encampment in Crawford, it was a useful symbol for the decadent isolation of the Bush White House. And so I say with all love, Cindy, back away from the fame machine. You are who you are, and you were great in that role, but you can't be someone else without a lot of work. And when things move too fast, you become a sock puppet, and easy to make fun of, and that hurts. You, me, the cause. You could still be doing good, but right now you're not helping. I have no idea whether you are leading the charge or following bad advice, but please rethink the whole thing. And he goes on to criticize her for being photographed in Venezuela with Hugo Chavez the other day. He writes, "What's Cindy Sheehan doing with Hugo Chavez? Yeah, she's a citizen. She can be where she likes. But whatever she does right now is real public. This just in. Hugo Chavez is not a nice guy. It's like the whole Fidel Castro thing. You may be bitterly opposed to American policies toward Cuba, and I am, but it's not because Castro is a saintly martyr. Chavez also played kissy face with Saddam Hussein. So did Donald Rumsfeld, but that doesn't make it right. Here's a little rule for citizens of the United States. Don't get involved in South American politics. You are out of your depth." Now Cindy Sheehan is talking about running for senator against Dianne Feinstein. That is such a bad idea, John Carroll says. She'd be doing it to bring attention to issues that matter, a lot like Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader ran for president in 2000, split the vote, and gave us George Bush, and that's the issue I remember. Also, never ride in a Corvair. Well, you can read the entire column, if you like, at sfgate.com. Now, I take John Carroll's point that Cindy Sheehan has done things that are out of her depth. And while I don't agree with Carroll's characterization of Hugo Chavez completely, I think there's more complexity there to the man, I do agree that it wasn't smart for her to be photographed with him and appear on his television show in Caracas, especially if she wants to run for the United States Senate. Now, I don't think it's a totally bad idea, even given the points that John Carroll made. I think that her run against Feinstein, if it materializes, will be a protest vehicle, not one that would unseat a sitting senator like Ralph Nader's spoiler role in the 2000 presidential campaign. So I don't agree with John Carroll there. And I also think that the episode, which he did not make any reference to, the T-shirt and arrest in the House during the State of the Union address the other night, actually played to her favor. And at first it didn't seem that way, but given the way the Capitol Police had to apologize and that the way that it turns out a Republican congresswoman, a congressman's wife, had a pro-war T-shirt on or a sweatshirt, it kind of takes the negatives out of the Cindy Sheehan event and makes her look fairly courageous. So I'd like to hear your thoughts, and feel free to express yourself and understand that even in progressive communities, we have to have honest and open debate about the issues that occur. And, you know, if you think that Cindy Sheehan has gone too far, feel free to express that. Maybe you think that this is off base and that she should just keep going every way she wants, and that's a fair comment to make, too. So let's hear about that at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466. And let me see who's been holding the longest here. It looks like, I've got to adjust my screen, I'm sorry, Jake in Arcata. Hello, Jake. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. It's your old pal, Peter B.
Hey, Peter. How's it going? You know, Tom's a great radio host, but you're better. I just have to say that, first of all. Second of all, I'm calling about John Boehner, or Boehner, whatever his name is. This is Congressman from Ohio, another corrupt Republican politician from Ohio. What do you know? He's the Republicans' answer to the indicted Tom DeLay. To make this guy their new leader is absolutely hilarious. I'm glad they did it. This guy was passing out checks from the tobacco industry on the House floor. His wife was a tobacco lobbyist. His child is a tobacco lobbyist. His other child is a lobbyist for Fannie Mae. I mean, this is a totally corrupt party, and they can't find anybody to lead their party who shouldn't be in jail at this point.
Well, I agree, and I think that they picked the lesser of two ethically challenged members to become their majority leader, and I think that they will rue the day. But in the meantime, he's there, and I think, again, it's amazing to see the way the media has played this. And I cited Chris Matthews earlier in the program today. He came barreling onto TV last night and covered the story and called it a clean break and made no reference to the K Street Project or any of the clear facts, Jake, that you just stated about John Boehner of Ohio.
Well, yeah, Chris Matthews is the same guy who was trying to say that Democrats were taking money from Jack Abramoff when not one single Democrat took money from Jack Abramoff. They want to try to make this a bipartisan issue, but the fact is the Republicans control the Congress. They control Washington, D.C. They're the ones taking the money. They're the ones who are on these, that have the chairmanships of these committees. They're the ones who need to be voted out of office. The Republicans are just totally corrupt, Peter.
Thank you, Jake. We got another Jake on the line from Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, and welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, before I make my main comment, I would add about Cindy that, you know, I don't disagree with what she's doing in and of itself, but the fact of the matter is a lot of people in this country are not that intelligent, and they get to vote, so you have to take that into account with things you do in public. But my bigger question is, Tom Hartman is of the opinion, like most people that listen to folks like you, that the 2004 election was actually won by Kerry.
Yes.
And so how come we can't sue? Take it to the Supreme Court and sue, I don't know, Diebold or whoever you have to sue to take it to the Supreme Court.
Well, Jake, they covered their tracks well enough, and I would direct you to the website. I get them confused. I think it's freepress.org. It's either .org or .net, and that's the online publication from Columbus, Ohio, run by Bob Petrakis and Harvey Wasserman. And they've done an excellent job. They've published a book about how the GOP stole the 2004 election. And the details are mind-boggling because they use so many different methods, some of them legal, or they may be ethically questionable, but not actual violations of the law. And so it's hard to really detail the pattern. And the other problem we have is with one-party rule in Washington and one-party rule in Columbus, Ohio. I was born in the Buckeye State, so I know a little bit about it. It's very hard to get traction to bring cases like this to either an investigative body or to a judicial body for prosecution. I don't dispute. I would love to see those issues aired out, even if they didn't lead to a change in the outcome, because I think that we need to know how elections can be gamed, how they can be manipulated, how these electronic voting machines cannot be trusted to deliver your vote as you intended. And those are the big issues that I think we need to focus on. But I don't dispute, I'd love to see a lawsuit that could clarify once and for all what was stolen in Ohio.
So why haven't they brought the lawsuit, at least attempted?
Well, I would direct you to a guy named Kerry, the junior senator from Massachusetts. Thanks for your call. And we've got Maureen in Seattle. Thanks for holding, Maureen. You're on the Tom Hartman program. I'm Peter B.
Thank you, Peter. Nice to speak with you. I just regarding Cindy Sheehan, I think that she awoke a lot of us up and gave us the fact that she was a mother who had lost a son in Iraq. I discovered I was not alone in feeling at last I could start using my voice. And I think that one thing that came out of the very unfortunate situation with the president's the evening of his speech was that it shows how seriously the serious jeopardy that our constitutional rights are in by virtue of the fact that she was arrested for wearing a T-shirt.
Well, and consider that the president singled out a widow and the parents of a fallen soldier, Staff Sergeant Dan Clay, who were there in the gallery for the photo opportunity, and he still has not found one moment to acknowledge Cindy Sheehan since last August. He simply cannot do it, and that is shameful. I agree. Maureen, well then hold on, we'll catch you after the break because I want to hear your other thought. I'm Peter B. Collins in for Tom Hartman. You can call me 866-440-THOM.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again?
Thank you, mister. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. And I want to return to Maureen in Seattle because the break got in our way. Maureen, go ahead and tell me your other point, please.
Thank you. I wanted to say that I think something that we have learned, and I'm of the baby boomers generation, is that our democracy is not free and that it requires our vigilance. And there are many of us who have, within this past year, have come on board with that understanding, and we have learned from sources like yourself and like Tom, and we're gathering information. And I think of us as the foot angels. It's our turn in history to move forward and to use our voices and gathering our resources from those like you, from Democrats, and even some Republicans who are coming on board who have been using their voices and not able to get through any of the bills and things that would help protect us, they need our help. And there are many organizations that we can become a part of. And we're learning that this isn't going to change overnight, but we have the ability to persevere, to be tenacious, and to change our fears. And I think this is the biggest thing, to realize that we can change these fears into courage and the anger into that tenaciousness and the perseverance.
Well, thank you, Maureen. And
going in that direction.
As boomers, we survived Johnson and the war and Nixon and the corruption and Reagan and the right-wing nuts and the Contra War and the illegal transfer to Iran. And I believe this is survivable, but we need to fight to really get our country on the right track.
That's right.
And it's a battle first with the Republicans, but really for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party as well.
That's
so
right.
Thanks
and
for joining us. Michael in Burlington, Vermont, the Green Mountain State. Join us here on the Tom Hartman program. I know Tom is very fond of Vermont, where he came from, and my ancestors came from South Burlington. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, hi. I'm calling about the Cindy Sheehan going to Hugo Chavez and now thinking about running against Dianne Feinstein.
Right.
Firstly, I don't see a problem with going to Hugo Chavez. I do really see a problem with her running against Dianne Feinstein simply because her credentials are a mother that lost a child,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we can sympathize with.
Well, let me take each of your points. First of all, I don't have the same criticism of Hugo Chavez as the columnist John Carroll, who I quoted. I do think there are issues there. Chavez has pummeled the press, and there is a law there that can have you jailed for being critical of his government. But on balance, you know, our government tried to foment a coup against Hugo Chavez, and our Secretary of State, Pat Robertson, broadcaster Pat Robertson has called for his assassination. And so it's a very complex situation, and clearly we're doing to Chavez what we did to Castro, which is pushing him into the arms of our enemies and others around the world, because we won't recognize that he was freely elected and that he is pursuing an agenda that appears to be on balance in the best interest of the Venezuelan people. Now, to California politics, I know a little bit about this. I'm not Dianne Feinstein's biggest fan. In fact, I do some media consulting, and I made a rare decision in 2000 to work for the Republican challenger to Dianne Feinstein, a great man, a moderate Republican named Tom Campbell. And it was an unsuccessful effort, and I have to say that Dianne Feinstein will be reelected this November, whether Cindy Sheehan runs or not. There is no significant Republican opposition, and she will waltz to another term. So Cindy Sheehan can perform a vital function as a protest candidate to raise issues about Dianne Feinstein's support of the Republicans and her collusion on the war in Iraq. And that, I think, is valuable. And so I say, come on, Cindy, do your best.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
I just hope she doesn't hurt Dianne Feinstein.
There isn't a chance of that. Now to Sam in Calgary, Canada. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Could I just comment on what you were just talking about with the Feinstein thing?
Please.
She can't hurt Dianne Feinstein because I think Dianne Feinstein hurts herself. But that's just an aside.
Okay, but I'm just in practical political terms, Dianne Feinstein is invulnerable.
Oh, yeah, because she's an incumbent.
Well, there's nobody running against her who can damage her.
Yeah, exactly.
The Republicans can't even field a millionaire candidate just to fill out the slate.
That'll be a long time coming. I just wish he wasn't such a Republican light. But at any rate, with respect to Cindy Sheehan, I don't have the same criticism that the chap in the article had about her appearing with Chavez. Yeah. I think she has a right as a citizen anywhere to appear with whoever she wants.
Yes, she does. And I support that wholeheartedly. It is not politically smart, though, if you want to be a candidate in a state like California,
right,
which is mistaken by many people as a liberal bastion.
Right. And they're going to spin it against her. But if you notice, the right wing, they've been spinning Cindy all along since the beginning. It doesn't matter what she does. They're going to look for something to go against her,
mm-hmm.
to spin against her. And I think a lot of where people saying enough Cindy, I think it's because of the fact that she, they're afraid of her. But I think if anybody has a right to have a voice about your war in Iraq, it's that woman.
Sam, thank you very much. You said it very well. You're right. They are afraid of her. And Bush, he cannot bring himself to even utter her name, to acknowledge her loss, and even to try to finesse her demand to meet with him. I'm Peter B. Collins. I want to thank you for joining us for this hour of the Tom Hartman program. Coming up to lead off the next hour, a man who I think is a major progressive force. He's running for the Senate in Pennsylvania. Chuck Panacchio will join us here on the Tom Hartman program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, Coast to Coast. And Tom, one of the hardest working people in progressive talk radio, took the day off today. He'll be returning on Monday. I'm sitting in, and my name's Peter B. Collins. I'm based in California, where I host a daily radio show on two Tom Hartman station affiliates, KRXA 540 in Monterey and KGOE 1480 in Eureka. My hat's off to those listeners tuned in and dialed up to us this morning. And if you want to drop me an email, two boxes you can try, peter@peterbcollins.com or peter@krxa540.com. And we've got some callers on the line who got worked up from some conversation last hour. Hang in there. We'll get to you shortly. But I want to introduce you to a man who I first talked to yesterday on my West Coast radio program and who I think everybody in America needs to know about. He is a progressive who is standing up and fighting for the Senate seat in Pennsylvania, currently held by Rick Santorum, who to me is one of the darkest of the dark side neocons in power in Washington today. And I think this is a pivotal seat if there's any hope for Democrats to not only regain control of the Senate and or the House and end one-party rule in Washington, but to reassert the real roots of the Democratic Party and throw off what I consider to be the yoke of the centrist, straddler, Democratic Leadership Council-type candidates. And the man we're going to talk with is Dr. Chuck Panacchio. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Chuck.
Thanks again, Tom. Appreciate it.
I'm Peter. Tom's got the day off.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Peter. Yeah, right,
that's okay. And as we discussed yesterday, I want to recap part of that conversation and then move in a couple of different directions. You have a very important primary challenge because the leadership of the Democratic Party has tried to clear the field for the handpicked candidate who is Bob Casey Jr.
Yes.
And Bob Casey Jr., for all practical purposes, is a very conservative Democrat. He is not pro-choice. He supported Sam Alito's confirmation to the United States Supreme Court, which for many of us is a watershed moment. Tell us about this.
Right. Yeah, Peter, absolutely. And to pick up on the point that we were discussing last night, frankly, it's not just the Democratic Party at the national level and at the state level here in Pennsylvania. But it's also about the establishment as a whole, because we have been systematically shut out of the mainstream media, by and large, and absolutely shut out by the pollsters, and been shut down by the consultant speak, which has come to dominate this DLC takeover, the Democratic Leadership Council takeover of the Democratic Party. So May 16th is a critical moment in not just Pennsylvania party politics, but really national party politics for progressives. It really is, defining Bob Casey in terms of his support of Alito certainly was a wake-up moment for many people the other day. But this is should come as no surprise. Bob Casey, frankly, is not a conservative. He is a right-wing Democrat for many of the reasons that you've cited. It's not just reproductive choice. It's also that he supports the president's war in Iraq unconditionally, that he doesn't support equal rights for all Americans, stem cell research. He does not support expanding stem cell research. He takes corporate money. We talked about this a little last night. But he takes money from 229 of the same givers that provide Santorum with his war chest, including all the pharmaceuticals, health insurance, and military industrial. He doesn't support universal health care, living wage. And, in fact, he supported the Shiloh bill. This, to many people, it comes as an astonishment, but it's very consistent with his support with Alito. And the Shiloh bill, as we all know, progressives know, that it was an attack on an independent judiciary. There's just fundamentally something deeply, deeply wrong with what's going on.
And pandering of the lowest order. I want to mention that Dr. Chuck Panacchio comes to the table here with some very serious credentials. He worked on he worked for U.S. Senator Alan Cranston from California, also Ron Dellums, who's now running for mayor of Oakland, when he served in the House and rose as a pro-peace man to run the Armed Services Committee. He's worked on hard-fought campaigns for senators like Tom Harkin, Tim Worth, and Paul Simon. And so you've got a very interesting set of credentials, including your academic work, teaching history, national security, politics in the media. So you, I think, are a very well-rounded progressive candidate. And tell us about the recent poll that shows that you're really on track here.
Yes, Peter, I appreciate the compliments. And I never I never looked to run for political office before, but then the Banana Republic election of 2000 came and went, and then the passing of Paul Wellstone and my dear friend Paul Simon, and then looking at my children who are 7, 8, and 9 years of age, and 17 years of students I've taught. And frankly, I cannot sit on the sidelines while the Democratic Party is being hijacked by many of the same forces that are taking over the Republican Party, and at the same time that I see our Constitution under frequent assault, systematic assault. So the poll that you refer to, the Zogby poll, James Zogby did a poll here in Pennsylvania last week, and many so-called progressives have kind of sat on their hands wanting to remain neutral in this race because they didn't see me as viable. They didn't see me as electable. They say, Chuck, you don't have the name ID. You don't have the resources. But the Zogby poll blows out of the water that argument that I'm not viable. In fact, among the five contenders for the U.S. Senate race, two Republican, three Democrat, I'm running ahead of the pack when people know where we stand on the issues. So the viability question is bunk, and that's simply more of the DLC spin on this race. Bob Casey's numbers, in fact, the Zogby poll reveals that Bob Casey's theoretical lead over Rick Santorum, which was 18 points last summer, is now down to 2. I'm running further ahead of Santorum than is Casey in terms of voters when they find out where we stand on the issue. So there's no excuse any longer for people to remain neutral in this race, to sit on the sidelines. We got to wake up this country, wake up all the organizations in Washington, D.C., from coast to coast, get people engaged in this campaign and support it.
And this is a very web-savvy listening audience. I want you to know Chuck's website is chuck2006.com. His last name is Panacchio. Democrat and a real Democrat candidate for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. And give us a sense of your very clear position on the war in Iraq.
Sure. Well, my position is rooted in my academic studies. I've been learning and teaching diplomatic history, which is the history of American foreign relations. I've been doing this for the last 17 years, getting a master's and Ph.D. and then teaching at the University of Colorado, Texas A&M. And more recently, Delaware Valley College in Pennsylvania, and now University of the Arts in Philadelphia. And my grounding, my thinking of this issue is so fundamental, and that is that, you know, the United States is behaving like the big bully that British were when they were trying to deny us our independence, you know, occupying our country and seeking to exploit our natural resources. Well, let's flip the turn, you know, take a look at what it would feel like if the Iraqis were in our country doing precisely what we're doing today. We just have to get into the psychology of how the world sees the United States, and that'll help us, I think, to understand why it is that 75% of the world's population is turned against us. But Iraq, of course, had nothing to do, as we all know, with 9/11. There were no WMDs. Saddam was in a box. What we did is we pursued this war, this administration, the neoconservatives. They wanted war with Iraq. They were looking for an excuse, and they found it with 9/11, and then they lied to the country. And the world knows this. We just need to wake up the Americans to this realization.
And Chuck, please. Why are there so many Democrats, particularly in the Senate, who cannot speak with that clarity?
Well, because of they've been shut down. I made the point earlier that Casey and Santorum are taking money from these same sources, and that we're talking to military-industrial companies. We're talking about Halliburton here. We're talking about General Dynamics. These are companies that have unscrupulous practices and have benefited from these non-competitive bids in places like Iraq, and are raking in billions of dollars for their stockholders. So those companies give money. They line the pockets of political contenders, Democrat and Republican, when they run for office. And as we all know, career politicians, and I absolutely am not one, career politicians do not bite the hand that feeds them. And this is what infuriates Democrats, progressives in particular, is that Democrats are taking money from
from these companies, these incredibly corrupt companies, these military-industrial, as well as the pharmaceutical and health insurance, and it shuts down debate, discussion, and serious handling of these critical matters.
Well, Chuck, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I want people to log on to your website. Can they donate to your campaign there?
Oh, you bet, you bet. I do not accept any special interest money. This is an entirely citizen-funded, citizen-run campaign. It's all volunteers at this point. We get a little bit of money, and this campaign will take it to the finish line. If we can raise $250,000 between now and May 16th, and it's really important not that people contribute directly, but that they spread the word among their friends, among their networks. They send out an email and have folks come to chuck2006.com and give whatever you can as frequently as you can give.
Well, Chuck, I'm gonna donate the fat fee that Tom Hartman's paying me to sit in for him today to your campaign, so look for that check in the mail.
Peter, you are super. I absolutely appreciate it and look forward to our continuing conversation.
Chuck Pinocchio, running for the Senate in Pennsylvania. Visit Chuck2006.com. I'm Peter B. Collins for Tom Hartman.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, Coast to Coast. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today, 866-440-TOM. All calls the rest of this hour. And if you're on the line, hold on. We'll get to you as quickly as we can. 866-440-8466. Joe in Pittsburgh, join us.
Taking my call, I just wanted to comment on your last guest. He sounds like a very educated and a very astute individual. He's running in my district. I'm going to try and support him. I was going to ask, he's off the air right now, I was going to ask him where he stood on illegal immigration.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what his position is. I haven't
gone
in depth with him.
Outsourcing in some of the areas that have affected our community greatly. As you know, this used to be the Still City.
Oh, yeah. I grew up downriver in Cincinnati, Joe.
Yeah, I'm retired now. I'm sort of getting politically aware.
Now, let me ask you something. Is this the first you've heard of Chuck Pinocchio?
No, I haven't. Just vaguely in the media around here, his name was mentioned, but not really as a guy that has a chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you had him on your show.
Well, aren't your major papers, and maybe there's only one left in Pittsburgh,
right,
but isn't it owned by Richard Mellon Scaife?
Yes, it is.
So you can't expect...
The golden rule applies there.
Yeah, you can't expect to hear too much about progressives there.
A lot of the media, I guess, is owned by billionaires, and you don't get to hear... I like to hear both sides of the story, and if you go to the major media sources, you only hear one side.
All right, Joe, I appreciate your call from Pittsburgh today, and I did learn that Chuck Pinocchio is going to be in Pittsburgh this weekend. He said he's going to be at the Strip, and that people in Pittsburgh know what that means. So if you're so inclined, go out and shake his hand and ask him about immigration issues yourself. Let's see who's been holding the longest here. I like to give credit to people who've been so patient. It's Paula in Carbondale. Hi, Paula. You're on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
Hi, Peter. I'm really enjoying you. I wish we had you here in Illinois. I called
Hold on. You can go to my website, peterbcollins.com, and there's a link to KRXA, and you can listen online if you want.
Okay, thanks. Well, I originally called, I'm a Green, and so I originally called to just make a little point of clarification and a little plug for the Greens. But in the meantime, of course, you've been trashing Greens, so I've been getting mad. But who did I trash? saying that Ralph Nader lost the 2000 election for Gore? I don't think so. Number one.
Paula. Hey, Paula, dialogue, okay? We get to talk back and forth.
Okay.
I was reading a column from John Carroll of the Chronicle. That was not my point.
Okay, never mind.
And what I was saying is that he was incorrect in alluding to Cindy Sheehan being any kind of a spoiler in the California Senate race, because there is no chance that a Republican will beat Dianne Feinstein, and there is even less chance that Cindy could defeat her in the primary. What she can do is help shame Dianne Feinstein into rethinking her position on the war in Iraq, where she has largely supported the Bush administration.
Yeah, although I did see her come out in pro-choice in the Samuel Alito thing, so I was concerned.
Yes, and after saying that she didn't support a filibuster, she finally did vote in favor of it. So pressure works on Dianne Feinstein, and Cindy Sheehan is uniquely poised to put pressure on her. I don't expect Cindy to ever sit in the United States Senate, but that doesn't mean she shouldn't run and express herself and try to move the issue.
Okay, well... Like Kucinich said once, if you vote for me, then I have a chance. And I think that's the problem with so many Democrats, which is my original point, is people cling to Democrats because they have some mistaken belief that they're going to be progressive. But and they won't even support progressive people like this Chuck guy, I can't see his last name,
Pinocchio.
Dennis Kucinich, who I worked for. Because they say, oh, they don't have a chance. So you get someone like Kerry who salutes and says, reporting for duty, you know, that was disgusting, although he still did win the election. But what I was originally calling about is Roosevelt is the, you know, how someone called and said that he was talking about a non-progressive Democrat, and he said, well, he may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
Right.
Actually, Roosevelt said that about Somoza, which makes it not so cute a story, you know. This guy was a brutal dictator of Nicaragua.
Well, Paula, I take your point, but the SOB phrase has been used hundreds of times with many innocent victims. Let's go to Scott in Kalamazoo. Hi, Scott. Thanks for holding. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thanks for having me. Well, my comment is going to kind of dovetail on what your previous guest actually was talking about, and that, you know, after listening to being more politically informed, I guess, you know, the past couple of years, it seems to me, and I've come to this thought and want your opinion on it because I'm having a hard time accepting it, that there seems to be a deliberate attempt by individuals or groups on the right of the political spectrum to permanently create a Republican majority that would grow and become permanent and unchangeable over time.
That is
and
a fact. That is their goal.
And that their method is to impoverish America and to be able to rig the vote when necessary because we can still vote. And that by impoverishing America in a way, it not only does it create the cheap labor they want, but, you know, it makes it possible or impossible to financially support an opposition party. And I guess I'm having a hard time accepting that could happen, you know, in our country, that people could set aside the fact that they're Americans and their morals and actually want to affect that kind of a change.
Well, Scott, I share your dismay, but it's happening, and we need to fight back. That's why I speak up on the radio, and that's why you called this program. I'm glad you did. More of your calls in a moment on the Tom Hartman program, 866-440-TOM. I'm Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, coast to coast. I'm your humble host sitting in for Tom today, Peter B. Collins, and Tom in Minneapolis join us here on the Coast to Coast Conversation. Tom, are you there? Going once.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you, Tom. Go right ahead.
Hey, I wanted to comment on a couple callers in the last hour on Alice, our wise elder in California, and a guy in Florida who called about Democrats using accurate sound bites. But first, real quick, your last caller, your green caller, Paula,
yeah,
who dissed FDR.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a shocker for her. Ralph Nader cites FDR as his greatest hero.
Huh.
So well, that might, you know, keep her up at night. But
yeah, and that, like I said, that phrase about my SOB, you know, he is an SOB, but he's our SOB. I've heard that applied to hundreds of people.
Right. Politics isn't all about dreaming. There's some pragmatism involved. Now, the last caller in Florida, he wanted to expand a little on unified sound bites and to hammer incessantly, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned, well, there's one phrase, culture of corruption, but there's one word missing before that. We should say Republican culture of corruption.
Or neocon, because, you know, I noticed, for example, that, and people are going to resent that I cite Tom DeLay here as a soundbite expert, But the guy is relentless. And right. anytime you ask him a question, he responds by maligning liberals, and often with rehearsed phrases like, well, that's just another liberal who wants unlimited abortion on demand.
Exactly.
And
what we should do is always, like, don't just say Congress, say Republican Congress.
Right.
Don't say Washington, say Republican-controlled Washington. And when you hear people say, well, the savings rate hasn't been this low since the Great Depression, that's the wrong answer. You got to say Republican Great Depression, because that's who caused it. And half of the Americans think it's a 50-50 gig, and it's not. Now, about Alice, I mean, I think we should have her as a guest, since she's, what, in her 80s, I think?
She's in her early 90s, I believe.
Okay. She lived under the Republican Great Depression. She can tell us a lot how it was, and how this current crop of crony criminals are similar, and how it was to witness FDR rescue us from that Republican Great Depression. I think that would be great to pick her brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly respect her as an elder, and I love it when she calls. So, Tom, will always make room for Alice on any program that I host. Thanks for checking in. Good to talk to you. Dave in Eureka's been holding for hours. Dave, join us.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, really good. Peter, I really disagree with you on something, but I think you'd be in for a bit of a surprise.
Okay.
Now, we've come to know Cindy Sheehan. She is another Czech Pinocchio. She is somebody that tackles the problem directly. She doesn't have her hand out to every special interest. She plans, one, if she challenges Feinstein, to do it in the Democratic primary. And if we can remember a Dianne Feinstein introducing her dear buddy Condoleezza Rice to her confirmation hearings, and seeing Dianne Feinstein vote for the bankruptcy bill, seeing Dianne supporting this criminal Bush war, if you have a choice between a Cindy or a Dianne Feinstein, if you think you've got a realistic hope, or if Tom or any of the listeners or any thinking Democrat, we're going to have Cindy Sheehan as our next senator.
Well, Dave, I was with you right until the last line. I'd love that to be true. And I'll tell you right here that if Cindy runs in the primary, I will vote for her.
And
I will support her, on the air. The problem is you have to look at the electorate in California. And once you get 30 miles in from the coast, it is a rouge state. And you have to understand that Feinstein has tremendous support as an incumbent and as somebody who has really hogged the middle of the road. And again, because there's no significant Republican challenger, take the case of Michael Huffington, who spent $35 million, which was a record at the time, trashing Dianne Feinstein and nearly defeated her when she was first elected in her own right in 1994. There isn't going to be the kind of machinery to take down an incumbent. And I want to be very clear. I support Cindy Sheehan's opposition to the war. I think she has done an incredible job of mobilizing people and galvanizing people. But that does not parlay into electoral victory. It's much harder than that, and I don't want to offer any illusions. That's not to say people shouldn't work to unseat Dianne Feinstein. I'm just a pragmatist who knows where the votes are.
I think I would prefer to have her take on her own congressman, the 1st District, Mike Thompson, who is another Democrat in name only.
Well, Cindy Sheehan lives in Vacaville.
Yeah, that's the 1st Congressional District, and it runs all the way up to Oregon and down into Vacaville and maybe over to Dixon.
Okay, I wasn't clear on that. You know, the maps are so squirrely in California, I actually thought she was in Ellen Tauscher's bizarre district.
Vallejo and Vacaville always has been the first, unless it's been redesigned.
Yeah. All right, Dave, good to hear from you. Thanks for the call today. Ronald in Bennington, Vermont, you're next on the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Peter.
Hi, Ronald.
Hi. I was calling you about the John Carroll, I believe the name is, article.
John Carroll in the San Francisco Chronicle, yes.
Yeah, I just thought it was ridiculous. Actually, I was driving in my car, and I got so angry hearing what he had to say that I drove home and called you. Because, I mean, his criticisms of Hugo Chavez is so hypocritical. I mean, Hugo Chavez was elected by the people, unlike our president, who was appointed by the Supreme Court. And I'm not saying he's
perfect. No one is. But I think, to quote the Bible, which I generally don't do because I don't want to sound like a person like Pat Robertson, but I
would
say...
Well, then let's not.
I would say, hypocrite, take the plank out of your eye before you look at the speck in your brother's eye because, you know, our administration is so corrupt that we have in there now.
Ronald, let's not get stuck on the comments that I was offering. I mainly wanted to give you a point of view.
Oh, I don't. I'm not referring to you as a hypocrite. No. I'm referring to John Kerry.
I understand. I'm not sensitive here. I just don't want to get distracted by that particular issue because the point I wanted to focus on is Cindy Sheehan. And again, politically, if her inclination is to run and seriously challenge Dianne Feinstein, she needs to have the political judgment to know that in today's climate, it's probably not helpful to be identified so closely with Hugo Chavez. And that's not to say that she doesn't have the right to express herself and do whatever she wants. It's simply a political observation or analysis that it makes her a very rich target. And there are too many people in the United States who buy the administration's line that Hugo Chavez is as evil as Fidel Castro in the minds of right-wing Americans. And I think that they are very different. And as I pointed out, I have what I believe is a balanced view of President Chavez. I believe he is a legitimate leader who is representing the deferred agenda of the real people of Venezuela. And while I think that he is excessive and I don't like his crackdown on the press and I don't believe that he is completely pure, that doesn't mean that the Bush administration had the right to support a coup against him. In fact, it appears that our fingerprints were deeply on the file, found on the files of that attempted coup. And then, of course, the stunning statements from Pat Robertson regarding President Chavez speak for themselves.
And, you know, I do agree that Cindy probably doesn't have a chance to win Dianne Feingold, but I do think it's vitally important that we need alternatives rather than like Hillary Clinton and Newt Gingrich running against each other. I mean, there's a difference, but it's not much. I think we need more progressives running.
Well, absolutely. I would love many citizens, including people who are activists on the war in Iraq, to step up and challenge incumbent Democratic senators, if only to, you know, force them to defend their records and to respond to, to progressive interests in the future campaigns. I really think that too many Democrats are too polite, too tolerant, and not willing to stand up and go forward with an intra-party war. But I think we need to battle for the future of the Democratic Party. I think we need to battle over the issues of centrism and corporate influence in the Democratic Party. And that's why I think Chuck Panacchio of Pennsylvania is so refreshing.
Right.
He really comes across as the kind of candidate I'd like to see in every state of the union.
Like, we need candidates like, FDR, not Bill Clinton. Because, Bill Clinton's just taken the Democrats to the right and more imitating the Republicans rather than the base that they come from.
Well, it's a mixed bag. I generally agree with you. I think the effect of the Clinton presidency was overall good, but his impact on the Democratic Party long term is not so good. And that, today we see the lingering effects, what I call the diminishing returns of the centrist strategy that got Clinton elected twice, but the cost was the House and the Senate. And we are still paying that cost today. Thanks a lot for checking in from Bennington, Vermont today, Ronald. I've got more callers lined up, but we've got to go to a break here in just a second. So stand by, and we'll take more calls after that break. 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466. Puts you through, and I'd love to talk to you here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins in California. You can drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, or peter@krxa540.com. And that's the website where we stream my radio show every weekday, 3 to 6 Pacific, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern. That's krxa540.com. We'll be back. We'll be right back.
the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nags in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that just ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, and I'm Peter B. Collins. Enjoyed sitting in for Tom today. I've got room for one or two more calls if you want to jump on the line at 866-440-THOM. Witt in Scottsdale called before, didn't hang on, and now he's back. Hello, Witt. Welcome.
Hi. I want to sum up what my fellow Phoenician Jake had to say about democracy. The quandary of democracy is that stupid people can vote, just like Cindy Sheehan and the World Can't Wait crowd can vote. And I certainly hope she does run for the Senate.
Hey, Witt, you can vote too, right?
I'm well-educated and can defend my beliefs and progressive beliefs without ever calling somebody a fascist, a Nazi, or anything like that. Okay, sir, I do have my belief system, and I'm proud of it.
But, Witt, anyway, hold on. Witt, I want to have a conversation, and if you'll indulge me, I'll keep you on the air.
Go ahead.
What I'd like to ask is, why do you feel the need to kind of express superiority to other people who vote in America?
As I'm doing the same thing every one of your callers has done so far, but I don't believe Bush is Hitler or that he stole the election. And if he had, what is John Sherry doing about it? Nothing. You know why? Because he's
John
not
who?
Insane and doesn't believe he had the election stolen from him. Okay, but my question to you is, isn't it true that since you have socialist leanings, isn't that why you think Hugo Chavez is really cool? And since George Bush really isn't socialist, but is rather, not in accordance with any of your beliefs, like your socialist system and, progressive thought believes in, mm-hmm. Is that why you think Hugo Chavez is cool and George Bush is Hitler? Because Hugo Chavez is a socialist, right?
And where did you hear me refer to George Bush as Hitler?
Well,
see, Witt, you're not dealing with facts here, and you don't appear to be dealing with a full deck.
You really do hate George Bush and think he's a dictator, don't you?
I do not hate George Bush. I think that he is a bad president.
Why don't you ever challenge any of the callers that have called in today and alluded to the fact that Bush is basically Hitler, stole the election, which he did not? Why don't you challenge anybody like poor Allison, who believes with all her heart and soul that George Bush stole the election?
Because I believe he stole the election, Witt. That's why. I believe he stole the election, Witt. That's why I don't challenge people who say that.
John Ford Fiennes Kerry is doing nothing about it, let alone none of the Democrats in Congress are doing anything about it.
That does not mean it didn't occur.
Witt,
that's a specious argument. It goes nowhere. The fact that Kerry hasn't prosecuted the issues doesn't mean that the election wasn't stolen in Ohio. That is not rational.
If he had the election stolen from him, he'd be doing something about it, would he not? Yes or no? Don't you believe he would? A man that reported for duty and took a bullet for this country in Vietnam.
Witt, I sure wish he would, but he hasn't.
Don't you believe if he thought for a second that Caesar has taken over the republic for which it stands for, don't you think he would make like Brutus and even Dianne Feinstein make like Cicero if really George Bush had stolen the election? And by the way, Cindy is a bad liar.
To answer your deposition question, no.
Her mouth yesterday when she actually went into Congress and she told Tom she took off her jacket because she was warm. Do you actually believe that's why she took off her jacket?
Yes, I do, Witt, and you're
and
a bonehead for asking that. It gets hot in the House of Representatives chamber, and, you know, it's winter in Washington. Hey, Witt, thanks for calling. It was fun. Billy in Santa Cruz, you're on the Tom Hartman Program. Hello. Hi, Billy. I think we got you.
Hello.
Hi, I can hear you now. Go right ahead, Billy.
There we go. Yeah, that last call was truly amazing.
Well, his name, the given name he offered is Witt, and I would just say it's probably short for witless.
Let me just explain to him why it is Kerry might not go after Bush, even though he thinks Bush might have stolen the election from him. Because these people care the most about holding on to their seats and staying in the business. And if they thought that the people, us, would think it was sour grapes. If he didn't think he could prove it, if he didn't have the proof, he might be not man enough to do something about it. Like, I think they're all not man enough, and it's sort of why I called. I wanted to talk about Bruce Hershenson. Do you know who he is?
Oh, yeah, I know Bruce Hershenson. He ran against Barbara Boxer in the Senate campaign in 1992.
And he's the reason that I lost faith with Tom Campbell and with everybody else who plays party politics. Tom Campbell supported that guy who believed in nothing that Tom Campbell believed in, except they shared the same party. I thought of Tom as a man above politics, and then I thought of Tom as a political hack. Straighten me out.
Well, I do not carry water for Tom Campbell. He is a friend and a man I admire, and he has made political calculations over the years, and many political people do that. I understand your point.
That was wrong.
Bruce Hershenson was a gunslinger, gutter fighter, who really, he colluded with Sonny Bono. People may not remember this, but Sonny Bono was the spoiler in that race who kept Tom Campbell from winning the Republican nomination in 1992. And I actually witnessed a scene at Channel 5 in San Francisco where Hershenson and Bono teamed up to try to cause Tom Campbell to lose his temper on camera. And they were really trying to set him up and make him look like some sort of a wimp or something like that. And it was a very ugly episode. And your point is well taken. Tom Campbell should never have endorsed Bruce Hershenson. But that's how party politics work, and he did that to keep his future alive. He returned to the Congress and then ran for the Senate again in 2000. So I appreciate your point. Good to hear from you, Billy. I want to thank you all for your calls today. Thanks to Tom for asking me to sit in, and I'll be back next time Tom takes a day off. I'm Peter B. Collins in California.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. The way I see it, there's more to vacuuming than picking up the dirt.